and welcome to Aalto Helsinki podcast, a student-led show that opens the doors to the world of science.
Welcome to our last episode of the summer. I'm Vilma.
And I'm Emma. And to end our podcast and the summer, we have a guest from our sponsor, Thermo Fisher Scientific, Petri Kovonen, who is here to discuss his career path and proteomics with us.
Welcome to the studio, Petri. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, and thank you for inviting me. My name is Petri Kovonen, and briefly, I'm a father, I'm a husband, son, and a scientist. Currently, I live in Turku, but I work in a Helsinki metropolitan area. I like sports, good food and wine, joined with family and good friends. So that's a short introduction.
Yeah, we're glad to have you here in the studio, even though you commute from Turku as well. So nice having you here.
Thank you.
So yeah, we are having you here from our company partner Thermo Fisher today, where you are currently working as a senior researcher in microbiology mass spectrometry. So would you like to explain us a bit, what was your career path towards this position where you're right now?
Yeah, that's a very broad question. I was a little bit late bloomer when it comes to school. I was an exchange student in during my high school years, and after high school I completed my compulsory military service, which took 1 year. And then after high school, I wasn't ready to step into any studying or any other responsibilities. But I worked as a hotel bellboy for 2 years, actually, collecting money to do some interrailing. And about when I was 23, 24, I sort of grew up a little bit. I read my high school physics and chemistry and math courses by myself, and then applied to read biochemistry to Turku and also physics to Helsinki. Luckily, I was accepted to both of them, but I actually chose biochemistry in Turku. At that time, I had met a beautiful girl who I was deeply in love with, and of course, her presence affected a bit, actually quite a lot, for me to take the Turku position or study place. Yeah, actually, that turned out to be good decision in many aspects. Currently, that girl is my wife. We've been married 21 years and we have two kids. So that started my master's degree studies. And during that time also, we got a baby. So that was a busy 6 years. They were not that straightforward. I actually took some courses which were outside of the master's degree program. And I also worked in a margarine factory in Raisio in a QC lab and doing the night shifts. So you can imagine that didn't help getting studies any forward, but that was actually quite nice time. So that I would say not very typical way of handling studies, but all in all it was busy, but it was also very rewarding time. So that took 6 years.
Yeah, can I ask if you kind of struggled with or didn't really know where you wanted to go when you were younger, why biochemistry?
I've always been fascinated by natural sciences. At one point, I thought that I want to be a medical doctor, which later on in my studies, I actually spent 1 year studying medicine in medical school as a side project, more or less. I wasn't accepted into curriculum, but I was accepted to study 1 year with them. And I also like physics a lot, so that's that was the rationale for applying physics in Helsinki.
Do you have, like, when you were applying, did you have an idea of what kind of career you would have wanted out of it? Or was it just like, oh, I'm interested in these topics, I'm going to go with this?
Well, yeah. Well, I'm ashamed to admit that I never had a goal or any type of plan, roadmap that, okay, now I'm going to do this in order to achieve this. I just went along. Nowadays, there is a lot of pressure to put people very fast into the pipeline of getting degrees and then to the working life without really giving students a chance to figure out what they really want.
Yeah, and I think that's really nice to hear. Like you said, that you thought first that maybe being a doctor would be the way, but when starting the studies and getting opportunities to take different courses, then that's the time when you start forming actually what you want to do. But I think that type of like curiosity and exploring mindset is really, really good.
Yeah, I don't think you need to be ashamed of not knowing what you want. I mean, I think that is kind of popular nowadays, or people might feel huge amounts of anxiety about not having that maybe end goal, and they're just kind of like, well, I'm studying this because it interests me, but I don't really know what I might want out of it. That, you know, will reveal itself further down the line.
Yeah, yeah. So in that sense, I think I feel lucky that that time when I made these choices, the society was more accepting towards that. Things just then, they just happened more or less. Of course, I needed to do the work, of course, but all in all, it's just things appeared.
Yeah, I think it's also nice hearing from your story that career isn't the only thing in our life. There's a lot of things other than career or what we're studying or what our job is. And I think it's inspiring to hear from your story too, that you fell in love with a girl and that impacted your life choices. And I think that's okay.
Yeah, definitely. So. And it worked out very well.
Yeah, seems like it.
Yeah, so where were we? We were, so I got my master's degree, and then I had an idea that yeah, definitely I need to move to a company or industry. But that really, there wasn't anything that much available that I could actually choose from. Then there was this opening in Turku Center for Biotechnology. They were looking for a scientist, a staff scientist, and that was all proteomics and mass spectrometry. I didn't know anything about proteomics or mass spectrometry. I knew what the protein is. I had heard about the mass spectrometry in some of the courses that we did, but that was it. Yeah, luckily I applied for the position and I got it, and I started to learning by doing, pretty much. And that was professors Tuula Nyman and Riitta Lahesma who actually accepted me, and they were doing the interview, so I actually owed them a lot. And during those years, I started working with different research groups. They had some questions related to protein identifications and of course proteomics. But pretty soon, when working, you start to develop your own ideas, of course, and you start to think that, okay, what could be done better in this and this step? So you automatically, you start to develop different methods. And sort of while doing the work, I was able to then also publish some of the method development papers. And in a nutshell, then I found myself in a position that hey, I have these publications. And we had a change in then the head of proteomics. Professor Gary Corthels had joined in then, and he really encouraged me to then push forward and just make a PhD out of what we've been doing. I had the publications, I needed the studies, but I had these medical school studies which actually fulfilled that need. Mm-hmm. And then together with all the conferences and teaching and other stuff that relates to this PhD studies, they were all done. And that took me a little bit over a year to finish my PhD. So,
wow.
So that's, I was very fortunate. And of course, I have to still say thank you to Gary, who actually encouraged me to do this work.
Yeah. I like it how you had this 1 year of cool med school research that you said that was kind of, you know, for fun or kind of outside of your master's program. I think sometimes nowadays people don't always do something that they think is fun because they fear that it might slow down their progress in a career path. But I think that's a good example of showing that, you know, it is worth pursuing those things that you do for fun, even though it might not lead somewhere, because now you found out that it actually was very useful.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you said it. It's you should do what interests you. So then after PhD, there was a postdoc. So when I finished, this Gary Corthels, he asked that, what do you want to do, Petri? What do you want to do? And I told him that, there's this SRM, which is Selected Reactor Monitoring New Technique. And there is a world famous professor, Rudi Aberschold, in ETH, Zurich. And he was one of the leading figures in the world to spearhead that development. And I said that I want to go there. And we discussed, and he said, well, that's a very good choice, but now you just need to get in. And it's just not, you don't walk in and applied, and I got an interview. And the interview was very successful because I got in. So, and those years in Rudi's lab, they were no less than life-changing professionally and also for personal life. Yeah, it was amazing. We actually got the paper out of that during that year. Which was published in Nature Medicine, which is highly appreciated journal with a high impact factor. But that's still beside the point. Of course, it feels very good. But the biggest thing for that is, at least I feel, is that there is this Australian Cancer Research Foundation. They gave $10 million for guys named Phil Robinson, Roger Reddell, to set up a Center for Proteome of Human Cancer, which is a ProCAM, December 2015. And the center was launched September 2016. So what they want to do is that they took our paper and used that method that we published. It was sort of a proof of principle, a proof of concept method that they took, and they are achieving, or they want to analyze around 70,000 cancer tissue samples and generate world's largest cancer proteome database. And that would be then to use the quick diagnosis of cancer patients. I knew about this back in 2016 and 17, but I really never sunk in that how actually what the impact is. And then for the personally, it was a huge experience for the whole family also. My son still keeps asking that, Father, could you try to find a job from Switzerland that we could go back there and live there? And he just started high school. So yeah, I recommend everybody, if they have a even slightly idea that or desire to go see places, just pack your bag and go. It's just a mind-blowing experience.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And it must feel quite incredible seeing like how someone can use your work, which you didn't work with cancer, you just work with the method, and then someone finds the use for that in real life in that type of scale. I think that's pretty wild to think what kind of impact you can have without even kind of the intention.
Yeah, so that was a postdoc. Mm-hmm. So then after postdoc, yeah, I came back to Turku, and my plan was to take this method, what we developed, and then set it up in Turku laboratory, and then collect clinical collaborators and try to advance their science using this method. That happened. We were able to set up the method, and we had a few potential clinical collaborators with lots and lots of clinical samples. Then things actually came to stop. Then Thermo happened, actually, right after that. Mm-hmm. And first interview, I didn't qualify. But then it took a few months, and then they called me and said that, hey, we chose somebody for the position that you previously applied, but now we have this type of position open here, and your profile suits actually perfect. That would you still want to consider us? And I said, oh, yeah. And that's it.
Okay. Yeah, that's good that they remembered you.
Oh, yeah. So the point being there is that when you're looking for a job, you should just go out there and do the interviews. Even though if you don't succeed in first or second or third, you never know what that might bring to you later on, because you are out there, you are visible, you tell your story, you show your CV, but maybe somebody remembers you and is impressed by what you say or do, and there's a perfect match. That's what happened to me.
So if we have some listener who is not from a biology background or does not know what proteomics is, could you briefly explain what's it about in a more broad or general sense, and also like, how do you think proteomics will help the society in a broader sense, the research in the field?
Well, let's start with the easier one. Proteomics. Classically, it is defined as a study of proteome. And proteome is an entire complement of protein expressed in a specific cell line or tissue. So that's sort of, in a nutshell, the proteomics. But then why to study proteomics? Or there are many things going for proteomics. But as said, it's not the holy grail. It's other omics amongst the others. Also, the drugs are mediated by interacting with proteins. So learning more from proteins, that enhances the drug development also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess now that we're talking a little bit about proteomics and stuff, just out of curiosity, what's been your like favorite thing that you've learned through proteomics?
I'm always amazed how versatile mass spectrometry based proteomics can be. You can do mass spectrometry imaging. It's very appealing to me. Also, you can be very specific. You can target proteins very accurately in terms of identification and quantification using SRM. You can do so much with the same, more or less with the same instrument or instrumentation. And what was very difficult when I started, like, I remember analyzing one or two proteins pretty much a day. Nowadays, you can do thousands and thousands of protein identification and quantifications in a matter of minutes.
Oh, wow.
So the speed, how things have evolved, it's amazing.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I guess you kind of said that, like, the proteomics field is continuously improving and whatnot, but do you think it's like a new breakthrough field?
Yeah, I certainly hope so. And I think it will. Characterizing all the human proteins, all the modifications and all that, that eventually I'm sure that will happen. But what then?
Yeah.
We know the proteins, but we need to relate that to something meaningful, which is disease or some other time of day. What is your proteome when you sleep, when you're angry? And then how to combine that into meaningful data with other omics. It's a complex thing, of course. But for the future, I would like to maybe use this ProCan as an example. So what they want to do is they want to develop this proteome repository. And then when some sort of cancer is diagnosed or there is a suspicion that there is a cancer, needle biopsy is taken. And then they use this method, very rapid method, to extract the proteins from the tissue on single shot into the mass spectrometry, and then they overlay that data to that repository. And since they have all these different cancer types there, they get a match, and then physician can already start right type of treatment for the patient. And that's a matter of hours. The initial and the first treatment is more likely to be correct when used that approach than what it is today. And it's not there yet, but this is their goal. And I think that's almost future. It's almost here, but not yet.
Wow. And I would imagine combining those methods and everything with artificial intelligence and all these other technologies would also work pretty well.
Well, that's actually a very good point that you brought up, because artificial intelligence is already used in proteomics for identification or characterization of proteins from the mass spec data.
Sounds like you think proteomics is going to revolutionize healthcare.
That has been said for quite a long time, that proteomics is the next thing. And the thing is that what to do with the data. And it's very easy to generate a lot of data nowadays. Yeah. What you can do with it.
Yeah. What are the conclusions that you can draw from that data?
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but like we mentioned the Human Genome Project. I feel like it was kind of marketed or sold as like this, once we sequence the whole human genome, we're going to like reveal all the reasons why we have different diseases. We're going to be able, like, it's going to be super revolutionary. And then once we finally actually sequenced the genome, it was kind of like, didn't end up revealing the things that people had hoped for.
Exactly.
And then I think that's where then people were like, oh, now we need to do the proteins. And then maybe proteomics came about. But do you fear that that might be a result of proteomics as well?
I think we learned the lesson there. It is a milestone. No question about that. And they have made it better and better all the time. But yeah, I think it was a bit of a naive also thinking that, okay, once we crack our genome, that's going to be it. That's the holy grail of everything for what relates to health. But then came about that, okay, well, if there is a 20,000 or so genes, then there should be 20,000 or so proteins, because that was a one gene, one protein type of hypothesis. But then we started to see that, okay, well, there is actually at least 500,000 proteins. How is that possible? And only then we started to understand that, okay, well, it's not that straightforward anymore. Also here, when you know more, you actually know less. Paradox, but that's how it is.
Like you said, the more we know, the more we found out that we actually don't know. Exactly. So I think it's also kind of important to keep in mind that like know the unknown, like make sure you're aware of what you don't know.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's very, very valuable to people keep in mind. And I what I like about science a lot is that there's always a next question. And that's what keeps, I think, what keeps these wheels turning, that we're never ready.
There you have it, folks. That was our last episode to wrap up our time here with iGEM. It was a pleasure to have you here with us. We've learned a lot throughout the summer. We've talked about bioinformatics, health, past iGEM projects, our iGEM project, and hopefully you've been able to learn something from it. It's been a big pleasure from all of us.
And to all listeners out there who are interested about synthetic biology and creative learning, remember that applications for Aalto Helsinki 2022 open up in November. So stay tuned and thank you for listening.